it was just amazing. The major case management, the follow-up that was done, the resources that were used. We had undercover people at our disposal. We had spin teams. They're teams of 5 and 6 cars that work together that will follow anybody, any place that we want them followed to. They were at our disposal. Wiretap, polygraph, everything was there for our use, and money was no question. They were at our beck and call. Not that I had the pull to get them in, but the detective inspector that we worked with, they do. You don't get a polygraph test very often in an investigation. With these guys, when you work with them, you want one, you got one. But it was just the resources were put there, I'll tell you that for sure. The phone all around you, not believing it's real. How can this happen? So many emotions to feel.
This is Miri. I've been listening to these girls recording in my basement for hours, and I have to warn you, there's some very foul language and adult content going on. Listener, discretion is advised.
Welcome, listeners.
We're Shedding Light.
We're three moms on a mission, Candy,
Susie,
and Angela. And we're hell-bent on shedding light on missing persons cold cases across Canada.
In an effort to help families find the missing piece of the puzzle.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to Season 1, Episode 3. We need your help to find Melanie Etier.
To start out this episode, we'd like to discuss a little more in depth the police investigation into Melanie Etier's disappearance, September 29th, 1996. We have heard others criticize the police investigation surrounding Melanie's case, that perhaps in the beginning it wasn't handled so professionally. For instance, the boys that were with Melanie that night, they were treated very harshly and aggressively, sometimes with no parents present. Police even visited the school to speak with them. They were still minors. They were under the age of 18. The young lady that was observed and rattled by the white van was informally questioned from a police cruiser as she stood in a parking lot. People have commented that the things that they reported were perhaps lost, that calls were put into police, they received no calls back or follow-up, that perhaps a police officer was even involved or a cover-up was suspected. We ourselves have even questioned why so little info has been released to the public, especially after all this time. There must be some good reason the tip about the car outside the Pine Avenue residence was not released then. Wouldn't it have been prudent to release info about a car so others could confirm sightings or eliminate that car with an explanation? Obviously, more to it than we know. And it's no surprise, the public always criticizes investigations that don't result in resolution and don't know what's going on in private. What we do know from all reports is that the response to Melanie's disappearance was both intense and immediate. That was very apparent, and we touched on that in episode 1. So if you haven't listened, it will help you to understand the case better if you start there. Immediately, officers were dispatched and began searching the area around the Armstrong Bridge and the banks of the Wabi River. Two new Liskeard police officers were assigned to the case full-time. Within a few days, two OPP detachments joined the search, including a helicopter from Sudbury and a dog handler from North Bay, along with an emergency search and rescue team who did an intense search of Pine Avenue. Ontario Hydro even offered a helicopter to assist. The following weekend after her disappearance, Canadian Forces Base Trenton had a civil air search and rescue in the area, and they offered their assistance as well. By the 8th of October, OPP searchers and divers began a 3-day search along the Wabi River near the mouth of the Armstrong Street Bridge for any clues. By this time, two officers with OPP Major Crimes Unit from Orillia were added to the investigation. And by mid-October, Melanie's case was listed with Crime Stoppers. Their response was highly commendable. We were so very fortunate to have the opportunity to interview retired OPP Detective Constable Bill Devereaux about his time on the case. As you may recall, he joined forces with the new Liskeard Police Sergeant Dwight Thibb in July 1997 to work on Melanie's case.
on two other homicides at the time. And they had been solved, but weren't over with by any means. There was all the court work to do, so I shared between the three of them. The priority at that time, because charges were already laid in the other ones, were with Melanie. You know, Liskeard was policed by the Danisker Police Service, so we had little or no police activity going on in New Liskeard. I can speak more to once she went missing, and that, I'm sure, created a lot of problems and emotions in the town. Just why and how, and she was just such a great kid in so many ways. The friends that she hung around with and all that type of stuff, you don't expect that of that type of a person. And it created a lot of feelings in the community, for
mm-hmm,
sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was a lot of fear and uneasiness afterwards, for sure.
Yeah.
And did you know Melanie?
No.
No, no. But you grew to know of her, I'm sure.
Very much so.
Working on the case. And how long did you work on that case?
Till the day I retired, December 31st, 2002.
Do you recall approximately how many suspects you might have interviewed during that time?
It would be definitely in the hundreds. No problem saying that. And when we interview someone, it's not like television where you get a few words out of their mouth and you say thanks and run away. Sit down and spend the time, and everything they tell you gets written down on a statement, interview statement. So a lot of work, very tiring. It's the only way you can do it, and it's a lot of work. I would say right now it is a complete mystery right now. Mind you, I'm only basing that on when I left, and it was a mystery up to that time. I am assuming it still is. Is it solvable? All cases are solvable.
Mm-hmm.
Will it be? I have no idea. There's something that police services are accused of all the time, and that's tunnel vision.
Mm-hmm.
Tunnel vision being, we get a set of ideas in our mind that you did it, and that's the only thing we work toward, is to proving that you did it, and we ignore any other tips that come in. Well, that's certainly not the case anymore. Maybe have been in years gone by, but we have had very strong leads that we thought were strong at the time, and worked like hell to get them to their end, either by charges or by, well, they're not the person, and we've got to move on.
Mm-hmm.
So we never stopped having tips come in. And again, like television, anytime there's a tip that comes in, it is followed out to everything you can get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't ever take the chance of saying, well, that doesn't sound right, I'm not going to bother with that. Because you don't know where it's going to go. It's way too often that it'll come to court when charges finally are laid, and the lawyer will say, did you have a tip that came in on Mr. Smith? And you'll say, yes. Then, did you see Mr. Smith? No, we didn't think it was a credible tip.
Mm-hmm.
And then your lawyer is going to say, well, maybe that's the person that did it. How can you say my client did that? So it's all the tips that came in are followed through on. Some were far more credible than others, and we spent much more time on them, and there was possibility that they were the ones. But we had many things at our disposal, things like polygraph and forensic science and so on. It's not just, well, okay, but they didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason why we say they didn't do it, because of their polygraph test or whatever.
The boys that were with Melanie that night, do you recall if they were polygraphed, and if so, how many were polygraphed?
I have spoken with those boys. I have seen their statements. I am about 99% absolutely sure that they were polygraphed, but I can't say absolutely sure because I can't say that. Like I say, I wasn't part of my, I didn't take the statement from them. It's just a difficult thing. There's an awful lot of people that think highly of the boys. There's people who don't,
mm-hmm.
just because of what happened that night and in their watch type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not fair to them. We have no evidence at all to suspect at this stage that they were involved, or at least back in that time when I was working.
Mm-hmm.
What's happened since then, I have no idea. There was that night, from Doc's bar.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple of the OPP officers up at that end of town, just making sure everybody gets home at the time to go home and does it peacefully. And they didn't see anything unusual that night, and that would have been around the time that Melanie was going home. Like, we're accountable for all of our tips. There's such a thing as the major case management.
Mm-hmm.
That back in those days, it was a relatively new thing where detectives went through, and you're very, very accountable for every minute that you're on the job and all the things that you do. And we had books and logs of the tips as they came in, who was assigned to them, and what the outcome was. Things happened. We had, while I was on it, and I guess relatively early on the case, we had kids that resembled Melanie and were dressing up like her in the clothes that she went missing in the time.
Wow.
We were seen on the highway, and tips were called in as to, wow, we've spotted her, and it all turned out to be stupidity on their part.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's amazing the things that you run into in these things that just sets your case back. When you could be doing other work, you're following through on these things, but still, you follow them all up regardless. It's amazing. Like, the two homicides I was on prior to coming onto this case were a big issue for New Liskert as well. How many times do you have two homicides and one missing person in 1 year in a small community? Like, the first murder case I did was in Thornlow, in the neighborhood. So a lot of people were fearful of that, thinking that's the key. And those are the cases I worked and knew them inside out, interviewed the suspect time and time and time again, knew it all through the court, and there was never anything that tied them to this case either.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people will swear up and down that's the missing link. What amazed me, and it was an eye-opener for me, and like I say, I'd done three murders before that, but this is the one that I've never seen so much resource put to, and that speaks well of police services to be able to do that. The rewards that were put up, the use of forensic science from the province of Ontario, from the OPP forensic labs down in Orillia, the way we were able to keep it in the media, and Celine was part of the spear behind that, is to keep it in front of people's faces. It was just amazing, the major case management, the follow-up that was done, the resources that were used. We had undercover people at our disposal. We had spin teams. There are teams of five and six cars that work together that will follow anybody, any place that we want them followed to. They were at our disposal. Wiretap, polygraph, everything was there for our use, and money was no question. They were at our beck and call. Not that I had the pull to get them in, but the detective inspector that we worked with, they do. You don't get a polygraph test very often in an investigation. With these guys, when you work with them, you want one, you got one. If you're speaking with Celine, say hello.
I will. Thank you, Bill.
Proudest lady I've ever met.
Very much so. Incredible strength.
She loved but hated to see fall come, because the leaves come off the trees and hunters are in the bush and might find Melanie. She didn't like the spring because the snow was gone and the grass was brown and it might happen, but she was also more hopeful that she would be found. But tough lady, I'll tell you.
Wow. I don't know about you listeners, but we had no idea the number of man hours that was put into Melanie's case, the number of suspects that were questioned is unreal. The resources, girls?
I know. Yes. No expenses spared, so many resources at their fingertips. You know, it's so impressive and so enlightening, because we didn't know any of that, and it really changes one's perspective of the whole investigation.
We should say kudos to the Ontario Provincial Police. They should be commended for the work they did on Melanie's case back then and have continued to do for over two decades now.
So Bill shared a few very interesting details with us there. Apparently there were two OPP cruisers at the top of Armstrong Street where Doc's was.
that was the bar, as our listeners hopefully recall, that was a mere two blocks from where Pine intersects with Armstrong, the first turn in Melanie's path home. Hopefully, many of you have had a chance to look at the map posted on our Facebook page of Melanie's route home and see exactly where those OPP cruisers were. And because New Liskeard was then policed with its own police department in 1996, we can only assume there would have been at least one local police cruiser on patrol as well. So how in the hell did no one see anything? Or better yet, who in the hell was ballsy enough or perhaps stupid enough to pluck Melanie out of thin air with so many police around?
So let's talk about the trio, the uncle and the two nephews, who seem to be the obvious suspects in Melanie's disappearance for many reasons. We spoke with someone who was close to the uncle and family through childhood and teen years.
All these years, I tried to find out where he was in prison because I wanted to be able to look him in the eyes and ask him if he knew where she was. I'd like to know when he's getting out is what I'd like to know. Hopefully he's never getting out. Hopefully he has behaved so badly in prison that they have deemed him a dangerous offender. I don't know. Like, oh my God, his father was horrible. Like, you know, it was no loss. I'm sorry for anybody who was related to him, but it was no loss when he died. It was absolutely zero loss. It
just
was like,
not
oh
a
my
nice
God,
man,
thank God my cousin is finally free of that monster.
If they are indeed guilty, then why haven't they been caught or arrested? We have heard from many different people about many different stories, all featuring this trio. We were informed that a young lady incarcerated in a juvenile detention center with the teen arrested for the Gauche murder was told by that teen that he was involved in Melanie's disappearance and murder. We've been told the young man who went missing after Melanie and was found murdered more than a year later was at a party sometime in the 6 weeks between Melanie's disappearance and his own, and reportedly told a young man there that he had helped put someone through a wood chipper. We have heard from two individuals that an acquaintance of theirs on their deathbed told them a story about his cousin taking, raping, and killing Melanie and disposing of her body through a wood chipper. Again, this deceased man is a relative of the trio. We have heard many variations of this theory, the basic story remaining the same, but taking place in various locations. Loose lips sink ships, as the saying goes, and sounds like there was no shortage of bragging.
Apparently, according to court transcripts, the uncle was a bullshitter. Even his cousins that testified on the stand said that he had bragged about the previous murder, but they didn't believe him. When asked why they didn't go to the police about his reported bragging about a murder, they said they didn't believe him because he bullshitted all the time. And the nephew? Well, we've corresponded with some individuals whom he was very close to, and they claim they even suspected him and his uncle, but the teen denied he had anything to do with Melanie's disappearance. I didn't even know her. Why would I kill her? And why would he lie to them and confess to strangers?
Good question. Well, the police were interviewed many times by the media with the same question. Were the disappearance of Melanie and the other teen, the other nephew of the trio, connected somehow? The answer was always no. Even after it was discovered that the young man had been murdered, the police insisted that the two murders had no connection to Melanie's disappearance. And then you heard retired OPP Detective Constable Bill Deverell. He worked their murder investigations. He observed and interviewed the remaining two of the trio, uncle and nephew, relentlessly. Even their phone lines have been tapped, and he said he could find no connection. So even though they find no connection, it's so hard for your brain not to go there with so much information that we've been fed or dug through.
After we read through all the articles about the whole scenario, the murder in April of 96 of the drug dealer, and then the nephew disappearing and being killed for going to the police, and hearing about how racist at least two of the trio were, we were sold. We figured it's got to be them, right?
Well, when we first started to talk about it and we were talking about them, that's what we said. Remember, mm-hmm. we're like, this seems really, this tangible. Seems like this could happen. Yeah. So, yeah, we kind of went there right off the get-go.
And you think if somebody is that, you know, capable of doing something so sinister to their own family and to it just really makes you wonder, right?
Well, we just keep coming back to these guys. Mm-hmm. And yet every time we do, it's like there's so much there, but there's nothing there.
But they haven't been arrested and we have to keep moving on.
Yep. So let's move on. So no doubt, some of you are still reeling somewhat from the mention earlier of a wood chipper. And yes, you did hear that right. We had a really hard time deciding whether or not to bring this up into discussion. But because it is a rumor that has been rampant for many years, it's difficult to avoid. We have heard many, many stories regarding the involvement of a wood chipper to dispose of Melanie's body. Almost all of them involving the trio or a variation thereof, with different locations given, mostly over bodies of water, rivers, lakes. We've had one story of a field outside Kennebec, a gun range, a mill in Latchford. Thornlow was given as another location. And no doubt, if you live in the Temiskaming Shores area, you too have heard this rumor and wondered, as we do, if there is a grain of truth to it. And that's the only reason we bring it up. It makes one shudder in horror and disbelief to even think about it. If there is any truth to this, may whomever is responsible rot in hell. If it is merely a rumor, who is the sick fuck that started that? As if Melanie's family hasn't had enough pain and grief. Damn you, whoever you are.
We have had so many pieces of information submitted to us that still need sorting or more supporting evidence. We will call them tidbits. They may be something or nothing. So let's go through some examples. We've been told that an acquaintance of Melanie's family was in jail for a minor charge and was told by another person in jail that he knew who was responsible for Melanie's disappearance. And apparently, upon sharing this information, the family friend was beat up pretty bad. Turns out that family acquaintance was also somewhat of a suspect himself. We have had many names shared with us that people suspect, for whatever reason, are involved in Melanie's disappearance. We have passed every single name on to the police, as we have no way of researching these without further information. Mowat's Landing seems to come up in very different stories from different people. There were suspects in the case who claimed they were fishing there the weekend Melanie disappeared.
There was mention in a book that Mowat Landing may be Melanie's final resting place.
And someone actually wrote to us to say that hunters who came to town early to scout around before moose season opened would actually camp along Mowat Landing Road.
And we just wanted to put that out there, that there seemed to be an awful lot of mentions about Mowat Landing for whatever reason.
Conspiracy theories galore that we won't get into too much. However, I also want to mention police involvement in some way, whether an isolated individual or a cover-up for someone.
We did have quite a few little tips come in.
And we didn't know how to handle it.
Yeah, it doesn't make you feel super comfortable. Nobody really wants to go there. I think we had a person mention, you know, sometimes cops will let things slide for people that they know, like, i.e. a speeding ticket or, you know, flash your lights at them if you're going too fast. But I think some other people were suggesting things even further. So,
yes. And we have to mention it because we can't talk about everybody else and then leave the police out, because there's good people and bad people.
In every capacity.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. And we can't favor anybody here because we are just seeking the truth. And then there was the young woman who posted on an online blog that no longer exists that she believe that her stepfather, who was a police officer in the area at the time of Melanie's disappearance, had something to do with it.
But however, on the flip side, a lot of people don't like the police. So it's easy to send us an email, really making up a story or exaggerating a story, or it could be a partner or a spouse that's ticked off. So we have to think of that also, but we wanted to share everything with you that we received that could be a possibility. There was also mention of a homemade grave headstone found outside the cemetery in North Cobalt. More than one person has mentioned hearing that Melanie was buried under a bridge on the way to into Rouyn Noranda.
Where's Rouyn Noranda?
It's in Quebec. It's heading down the Quebec Highway. It is in Quebec.
How many bridges? Yeah, so I'm not familiar with the area. How many bridges are in that area?
Well, I think it is just one going into Quebec. But if you go the back roads towards where I took you ladies mm-hmm. on our trip, there was two other bridges on the back roads, but it's not in Quebec. There's the Blanche River has three bridges. So that's why I kind of think of that place, but it could be any one of those bridges that people are talking about.
So I think we need to take a little break and maybe let our blood pressure ease up a bit. It's a lot of intense stuff for our listeners to absorb and even for us to absorb. We thought it was important to let our listeners know that we're recording this podcast via Zoom from three different locations. So due to COVID and just us being moms and having our own lives. So I thought it was kind of interesting to let you know that sometimes I may be inside a closet with a pillow propped up to prevent echoing and the sound of my lovely neighbors who like to mow their grass every time we record.
Or knock on your windows.
Yeah, or knock on my windows because they're coming into my neighborhood for a bike ride. Sometimes Candy has to stop recording to divert family, kids, dogs, cats, anybody.
Everything.
From walking in on her and her neighbors outside honking their horns. And sometimes Angela has to tie a scarf tightly around her headphones to prevent feedback while cutting off the circulation to her head.
Can we post a picture of this online? Yeah, I want to post a picture. Thing. You have to see this.
It's such a good thing that we are not showing video and that we are just recording our voices. So maybe we're a little hard on ourselves, but we want you to know that we're trying our best under the circumstances. And it can only get better, folks.
We apologize for sometimes the sound quality.
We're
not there yet.
Sometimes our Wi-Fi is like, if we have to leave a room to go quickly record somewhere else under a bed or in a closet, the Wi-Fi connection weakens and then we sound robotic.
Yes, so I did.
We apologize, but like we said, it'll only get better.
Thanks for listening.
So from all accounts, it sounds like it is possible that there were two questionable vehicles spotted that night. The car approaching Pine Avenue and the van. The van, the car, maybe scouting for someone, one covering for the other. Were they working together? Was one or both related to Melanie's disappearance in some way? There was a recent tip that there was a white car seen around town the night of Melanie's disappearance. The strange thing is, it has lights off. So this vehicle's spotted, its lights are off. It was thought to be an older model Mercury Topaz or a Ford Tempo. Both of those vehicles began manufacturing in 1984 to 1994. So rack your brains, people. We need your help here.
Yes.
Do you recall any vehicles you may have seen that night driving around with their lights off? I don't know if those models had automatic lights back then or if you could actually shut them off or if you would have had running lights, but for that vehicle to be noticed with no lights is pretty odd.
Yes. Yes. And if you remember walking down the street and seeing this white Tempo or Topaz and it just seemed out of place or... I don't know. We can take anything. And it's pretty exciting to be able to share this.
I did a little research on cars in that era, and there weren't a whole lot of cars like there are these days. And Oldsmobile 88 also came up. It was a car manufactured about mm-hmm. the same time, very similar. And you talk about the lights being off. And mm-hmm. I actually spoke with a woman this week who shared a story with me, and unbeknownst to me before that was, and maybe you girls aren't aware of this, but for a car to drive around with its lights off, at least a modern day car, if you have your emergency brake on just ever so slightly, all your running lights go off. You're in the dark. Mm-hmm. And apparently this is a trick that police use sometimes to sneak up on you, and all news to me.
Yeah, I've never heard of that. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. So,
just to repeat it, there was a white vehicle with its lights off spotted the night that Melanie disappeared.
Mercury Topaz, Ford Tempo, possibly an Oldsmobile 88. You know anybody that had one of those back then? Give us a call.
Sadly, though, we have had many stories and opinions shared with us about New Liskeard and the surrounding area back then. And it wasn't just the trio who were guilty of racism in the small Northern Ontario town. We've been told stories, we've read in online forums and social media posts that some white supremacist groups were active in that area at that time and were either causing a ruckus or holding a meeting in a local restaurant in the days before Melanie's disappearance.
Look him in the eyes and I know when he was bullshitting. And I don't think he was bullshitting when he said about rounding up black people and taking them up north. I have a funny feeling you're going to find him sitting on the throne of being the head of the white supremacist group in prison.
Yeah.
The response from the community and the surrounding area has been overwhelming. I'm shocked. I'm elated that so many people have come forward. We have numerous texts.
It's been amazing. Emails.
We have felt the love from the community. They want this solved. They want to help us. And it's amazing and it's overwhelming. And they really care about Celine. They care about Melanie. They care about the community having some closure. It's fantastic.
It's affected everybody.
So many. Yeah, it's affected everyone. And, you know, to be privileged enough to have phone interview a lot of these citizens who are just concerned, like they want to help. There's no fame here for anybody. Everybody just wants the same thing. So I think it's pretty fantastic.
Yeah, we appreciate absolutely. You so much because you're helping us and we're helping you. So it's a big circle and we can sort the information you give us and share it this way. So thank you so much. You're great people. I'm from there. I'm a great person. So
yes, you are.
We're great people.
Yeah. Thank you for the outpouring of love and support. And to me, it's truly touching and it does restore your faith in mankind's ability and choice to do the right thing. Every single person with the same common goal to bring Melanie home.
Amen.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
Then we come to Sarah. You remember us speaking about Sarah in the previous episode. And Sarah was one of the three young black girls in town at the time. We heard many reports of Sarah hitchhiking after Melanie went missing. There may have been other hitchhikers, the other young black girl that lived in town, as they chummed around together as well. And we heard that Sarah started dressing up like Melanie. She started wearing the same clothes.
I think she even put hair extensions in. It
might have been both of them. So I just don't want to narrow in on Sarah, because mm-hmm. I did hear that both of the girls got hair extension. I could be wrong, but I wanted to share it because that's what I have heard. Mm-hmm. So instead of just saying Sarah.
And Sarah was approached on the street a few times, was she not, by passersby or concerned people who thought she was Melanie, who said, your mom's looking for you. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. you know, and so obviously they looked very much alike to a person that may not have known them too well, but had seen them in town. Mm-hmm. So
from all accounts, what we know, Sarah is now in Vancouver. And we feel that she may hold the key to Melanie's disappearance. As you know, as we discussed previously, Melanie's disappearance could very well be a case of mistaken identity, and we think it's highly likely that she was mistaken for Sarah. Sarah left for North Bay shortly after Melanie disappeared and the nephew of the trio went missing. and we've had some mixed reports about that, how shortly after. It could have been weeks or months that she moved away. We've spoken with her mom, and her mom moved to North Bay in 1998. From there, Sarah moved to Vancouver on her own, and she's slowly been disappearing from her family. They've been unable to reach her, and they're terribly, terribly worried for her safety. Some believe she hung out with a good crowd. Some say bad. And girls, I mean, think back to your high school days. Did you hang out with a good crowd or a bad crowd?
It was a mixed bag. Mm. If you did sports, you hung around with some of the people on the sports teams. But then, you know, if you go hide and have a cigarette, you'd hang out with the smoking crew. It was all over the board. I don't think any of them were really bad, but there was a separation sometimes.
Oh, yeah. I had a real diverse group of friends.
Yeah. And being my older sister, I got to enjoy some of those friends too. So if our mom's listening, she should plug her ears. But we had a very diverse group of friends. And some of the things we did, you know, I'm not proud of. But so it doesn't mean we're bad people.
Well, no, and I am grateful every day that, you know, I took the path that I did, because I could have very well taken a very different path and ended up in a very different life. So
absolutely.
We found it very difficult to get a concrete answer as to whether Sarah actually hung out with the murdered nephew of the trio, or if he and his half-brother merely supplied her drugs, because we've heard there is some connection. We have heard that the murdered nephew was perhaps attempting to do the right thing and go to the police. Was he Sarah's friend? It's quite possible. We also have had many people tell us that he didn't have that horrible racist streak his uncle did. Sarah's mother continues to search for her daughter's exact location so that she can keep in touch with her. She last heard from her during a brief telephone message in February of this year, and she wonders daily whether her own daughter is dead or alive, swallowed up by a life of drug addiction. We have attempted to contact Sarah at the many phone numbers her mother had for her, but to no avail. We also know Sarah has a child who now lives with the father of the child, and Sarah has a half-brother. And Sarah had a former stepfather who we have read was involved in the drug world. Maybe one of them can help us find Sarah.
Well, I know one address that that her mother shared with us that she had for her, and she couldn't remember exactly from what point in time, was 36 Blood Alley in Vancouver, which is actually the old Stanley Hotel. And the hotel has been converted into, was converted into a shelter for the homeless. So that would have been the time, I'm assuming, that she stayed there, resided there. I do believe in 2015... they started plans to revamp the place. I don't think it actually started taking place until 2017. So it would have been vacant with proposed plans from a new developer to restore it to low income units. So where she's gone from there, we have no idea. And this is a long shot, but if any West Coast folks are listening, perhaps you work in the Blood Alley area in Vancouver. Maybe you are a worker in a shelter. Maybe you know a 40-year-old Black woman that goes by Sarah or Sierra that is homeless and using drugs, living on the streets. If so, we need your help. Sarah's family want to hear from her, and so do we.
Sarah, if you're listening and you're out there someplace, come back to Ontario where you have people that love you, family, friends. All my love, Mom. You know, if you make a difference for one mother, and that mother finds peace with knowing if her child's alive or dead, then there's hope for me too, you know, because I can't imagine what she's going through. I haven't spoke to mine. I know she was alive, so there's a difference. I didn't know for a long time, but I do know now, so I feel differently about it.
Mm-hmm.
But not knowing it could be pure torture, looking in every corner. Mm-hmm. All the time, you know. That's got to be hard as can be. I can't imagine the pain and the suffering that the woman's been through this many years, and nobody seems to be able to get anywhere.
This is where you, the public, can help shed some light. Maybe the perpetrator is dead,
Maybe the perpetrator or perpetrators are in jail. Maybe they had said something to somebody, and maybe that somebody is you. And you always thought it was bullshit. Maybe you were hearing Melanie's story for the first time, and something about it sounds familiar.
We thank you for sharing. Sharing is caring. And we are asking you to go one step further and talk about this. Talk about it with your neighbor, with friends or family that lived in New Liskeard or the area at the time. You think of something so minuscule that you wouldn't want to bother police with it? Don't keep it. Share it with us. Share it with Melanie's mom, Celine. Share this podcast far and wide. For all we know, he or she or they may be in jail or on another continent, or maybe they shared a cocktail or two with you on some tropical vacation or cruise. Who knows? Maybe they shared a tidbit with you that now rings a bell as you listen to this podcast. Who knows? Somebody knows, and they could be anywhere.
If someone local did this, someone else knows by now. They must. Who can keep that secret all to themselves all these years? Who is or are the sick bastards that can watch a mother grieve all these years, bereft of the life she should have, could have had, and should have shared with her daughter, Melanie? If Melanie's disappearance was due to the actions of more than one person, how can they live all these years looking over their shoulder, waiting with bated breath for the other person or persons to turn them in and make a deal before the tables are turned? Because ultimately, they will. Someone will turn on someone. Or maybe they too have been silenced. Can't you feel the walls closing in? Like, can you imagine if you're the perpetrator out there? How do you feel right now? Do you feel scared? How would you feel, girls?
Well, I feel like something like this podcast is stirring things up. People are talking now, and people are starting to remember things, and people are actually just sick and tired of it being so long. There's so much support for Melanie's mom and family, and they just all want her to come home. Her disappearance has affected so many people. So people are tired of it. They want whoever is responsible to be caught, not just find her remains, but the person needs to pay for what they've done. Mm-hmm. And I think that we're going to get an answer. And I think there's a few individuals that have maybe told us some things. And I mean, we may be three moms, but I don't think we're stupid moms. I think we're pretty smart. I think we can read people. And
we could read bullshit.
I know what I'm being lied to.
Can't bullshit a bullshitter.
I know what I'm being, exactly. I know what I'm being lied to. And I think it's time for somebody to come forward before it's too late for you.
So I know. If I did something like this, I would be looking over my shoulder. I would be the one that would go, should I go first? Because you got a lot now. It's been 20 years. So I'm sure you've got either kids, grandkids, something that you could really lose. So I would be, I'd turn myself in and pray for the best and do that. That would be me. I wouldn't live with that karma. There's no way.
We know that people know, and we know that they've been scared to say anything.
That was what I was going to mention,
It's a matter of time.
Yeah, but they are slowly coming forward and starting to fill in all the pieces of the puzzle, and it's only a matter of time. I'm like,
I can't believe what
we've learned so far.
I feel like this is the year. I think this is going to happen. I really feel that. I don't know why, but I just believe it and I feel it. And
I got shivers as we're talking because I believe it too. And I think it was like something just smacked us in the face today. And it's like, it's coming.
Is it a coincidence that we just started this, the three of us, this time, everything? I don't think so. I think things happen for a reason. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a higher power saying, hey, girls, we know we'll help you. I don't know.
Listen that's up and me. Pay attention.
Well, and that's the thing. We don't know all the answers. We're appealing to you, the public, because you out there, you, all of you know all the answers. Little bits and pieces. Help us put it together. And this is how we work together and shake things up. Please, if you know anything about Melanie's disappearance, come forward. If you know where Melanie is, where her resting place has been all these years, please come forward. Please give Melanie's family some peace. They have suffered greatly and for far too long. Attention, armchair detectives, internet sleuths. Scour the internet. Ask questions. Check out the blogs, the online forums. There is info out there. People talk. People anonymously say things. Each tiny little piece helps to complete the puzzle. And we're going to wrap up this episode with discussing the few details that have been released about Melanie's case. One may be nothing. The car that spooked her friend on Pine Avenue could have been a random nothing. The other info the police shared was that Melanie was spotted on the bridge at 2 a.m. This might not even have been Melanie. It could have been Sarah. And as you know, we know, Sarah lived right around the corner from the bridge on Pine Avenue East.
Yeah, that's never, ever sat well with me. The fact that somebody said they spotted Melanie on the bridge. She was so close to home. Police officers or the OPP being up the street at docks. Really? Was it her that was spotted, or was it Sarah, or was it the other black girl in town? We don't know. We don't know if it was actually her on the bridge. I don't know. That's never sat well. I don't even know if she actually made it that far.
We don't know.
And the car, I mean, was the car somebody scouting out for somebody, or was it just a car leaving a party in the area?
That didn't realize they didn't have their lights on.
Easy mistake.
Couple of cars.
We have only two real pieces of info that have been released by the police. Why? Well, they must have their reasons we don't know. Girls?
You know what? I think I couldn't imagine being the police. You don't want to give away too much because you don't want to alert anybody or anything. You want to keep it to yourself. But I don't know, after 23 years, I would say, what's the harm? What's the harm? But that's me. Mm-hmm. I don't know what their thinking is. But just as a mom and as just, you know, someone that cares, I want to know. Help me. I want to help you. Help me help you.
I'll tell you right now, if it was my kid, there'd be such mixed feelings. You don't want to jeopardize an investigation. And, you know, we did hear from Bill Deverell, and we know how intense it was. So we know they've tried everything. We know they followed every lead, every tip. They still continue to do so today. They're getting new tips. I don't know. I guess you don't want to jeopardize. You don't want to alert somebody. You don't want to set them off. You don't want evidence to be tampered with. You don't want them to have time to maybe silence somebody or take off to another province or country. So those are the things that we have to be aware of when, you know, so little has been released. But like you said, I feel like it's time to just let a little bit out there. I think that there's just that tiny little piece missing to bring it all together.
Well, you think about how many suspects that they've questioned, and we know from doing this project how many theories there are out there, how many theories and how many rumors. And if the police have to act on every one of those, yeah, they've been kept very, very, very busy. Are any of them valid? Do the police actually have anything, or do they actually have nothing? And that's why they haven't released anything. We don't know, but let's give them something, people.
We need your help. Can't do it without you.
So please have a listen to our friends at Please Bring Me Home as they give us a brief synopsis of one of their many cold cases, the disappearance of Dale Wyman, who disappeared in July of 1980 after boarding a Greyhound bus traveling from Ottawa to Thunder Bay, Ontario.
We are presenting one of their cold cases this time because currently they are very busy digging, literally digging, in search of remains of one of their cold cases. We are featuring Dale Nancy Wyman of Vanier, Ontario, near Ottawa. She went missing on July 16, 1980, when she was just 22 years old. A female Caucasian with brown hair described as knee length, brown eyes, 5 feet 5 inches tall, and 155 pounds. She had a scar on her back and may have also had a scar on her right knee from a previous accident. She had no tattoos and was in good physical health at the time of her disappearance. She would be approachable if found. She often went by the name Nancy or Gail. Dale was last seen boarding a Greyhound bus headed towards Thunder Bay, Ontario. Dale also had a boyfriend at the time of her disappearance, but his identity is unknown. There is no reason to believe that foul play is involved. She was last seen at 42 Washington Avenue, and it is unknown if she had her ID on her at that time. Dale took money out of her Royal Bank account on Montreal Road. She may have also spent some time in Edmonton, Alberta, in a hospital shortly after she left on the bus to Thunder Bay, but that has not been confirmed. Her parents are now deceased, and her siblings are looking for answers. Very little is known about her disappearance. At this time, no physical ground searches have been conducted. If you have any further information to share regarding the disappearance of Dale Wyman, please do the right thing and contact Please Bring Me Home at www.pleasebringmehome.com or tips@pleasebringmehome.com, or you can contact them on their anonymous tip line at 1-226-702-2728. You may also give information to OPP Missing Persons or Crime Stoppers. Thank you.
If you have any information about the disappearance of Dale Wyman, please contact pleasebringmehome.com. If you have any information at all about Melanie Etier's case, please do the right thing. Contact OPP or Crime Stoppers.
Or if you feel more comfortable sharing with us, please do. We'd love to hear from you.
Please join us on our wrap-up episode of the Melanie Etier case. We hope to have some new facts for you and discuss some potential grains of truth.
The folk all around you, not believing it's real. How can this happen? So